right back to it. The Fast Lane, brought to you by Schnucks on 101 ESPN.
Fastlane on 101 ESPN with Chris Raji and Brad Thompson. I'm Anthony Salcher. Let's head to the Brown and Crouppen Celebrity Line. We're joined by Chris Cotillo of MassLive.com. You can follow Chris on Twitter at his name, at Chris Cotillo. And Chris, appreciate you joining us again. I know that you've written some pieces for MassLive on the MLB rule changes. What's the most fascinating or intriguing aspect of these rule changes for 2020 for you?
Yeah, for me, you know, I think there is some expected stuff. Obviously, the designated hitter becoming universal is something that I think we've seen coming for a few weeks. There's some minor changes, but obviously, I think the most jarring for baseball fans that aren't paying attention and are going to be shocked by this once the game starts is the runner on second base to start extra innings. I think that's going to be a huge change. I was talking to my 90-year-old grandfather yesterday and told him about that, and he could not believe that it was a thing. He said he actually is kind of on board with it if it could speed it up and let me go home from the games earlier. So that's a win, I guess. But, I think that one's going to be a big change for people. Obviously, there's going to be a lot of health and safety things that are going to be changed. No spitting. And then, obviously, trying to socially distance as much as possible. You'll see people around the ballparks wearing masks and no sunflower seeds and all those kind of crazy things they're doing. But from a gameplay standpoint, definitely that second base rule.
Hey, how much do you think that they're going to focus on some of those little things that you were talking about? Little thing is unfair because anything that we can do right now to stop a spread is a good thing. But if a pitcher is on the mound and he's licking his fingers, or if somebody's spitting on the ground, I mean, what are they going to do to these guys? Or how much of an emphasis, really, Chris, do you think they'll put on that?
Yeah, I think it's going to be, depending on how strictly it's followed at the beginning. I think a great example is the PGA Tour, which is kind of like the guinea pig for everybody right now. We saw that they kind of decided to throw all these protocols, no fist bumps, no high fives. It's obviously a lot easier to socially distance in golf than it is in a lot of other sports. But at the beginning, they really put out those protocols. And we've seen now today, five players withdrew from the Travelers Championship this week because a bunch of caddies and two tour players have it. The commissioner came out today and said, obviously, these recommendations aren't working, so we're going to be stricter. And if anybody is caught high-fiving or shaking hands or any of that stuff, there's going to be strict punishments. I don't know if that means they're suspended for a week or what it's going to be, but even watching these tournaments over the last couple of weeks, you see guys are still shaking hands and high-fiving, and it's just, natural and a part of it, and they're probably not even thinking. But if there are outbreaks, then baseball is going to crack down. They're going to have to, prove that this is the only way a season can go on. We're already seeing there's outbreaks at different camps now with the Rockies and Charlie Blackmon. So they're probably going to be strict. I mean, there's going to have to be obviously some leeway for human nature and kind of the tradition and things you don't even think about. But I'm sure umpires are going to be told to give warnings. And then if people are blatantly not following those rules, I think there are going to be strict punishments, whether that be fines or suspensions. It's going to be interesting to see how they do it, but they have to be strict because otherwise the whole house of cards could fall pretty quickly.
With all those players who have tested positive so far, I mean, you kind of have to expect there are going to be some positives because a lot of these guys have not really been living under any sort of protocols, really. They live where they live, and it's not like they're getting tested every day as it is, but as you enter camp, you're going to start getting tested. So obviously, they expect there to be some positives. Do you have an idea of how many positives they feel like are acceptable at once?
I don't think there's a number there. Obviously, the fewer the better. I think a huge concern for baseball should be where these players live in the offseason. A lot of them live in Florida, Arizona, Texas, and California, which are all states that we've seen have spikes in the last couple weeks, and I think that is a huge concern. The guys that are working out in spring training camps, we saw it with the Phillies, the Blue Jays, I believe the Astros had a positive test at their camp. That's three out of 15 complexes in Florida. And there's probably more we don't even know about. So there is a very, very thorough intake screening that these guys are going to have to go through when they come to camp. They have to take a pre-spring training education course. They're going to then come to camp. They're going to get tested at a specialized appointment time. They come to the ballpark. No one else is allowed to be there with a team of, I'm sure, doctors and nurses and full protective equipment to administer all the tests. We'll do the temperature test, have them fill out the symptoms and exposure questionnaire. They'll do the nose swab. They'll do the antibody test. And after that test is done, I think they have to quarantine and self-isolate until they're given the all clear. With baseball, it's going to be a little bit interesting because all of the tests that they run, and I'm not sure how it works in other sports, but all the tests that they run go through a lab in Utah, which, you know, just thinking about, they're going to be taking samples from 60 guys here in Boston and then sending them out to Utah. It's not going to be an instantaneous turnaround time. So there's going to be a little bit of limbo there, and they're going to be extremely cautious during that time. I'm sure, you know, pretty much every team has contingency plans for potential positive tests. There's protocols in place. There's a certain amount of time. And really interestingly, as I and a couple other people reported yesterday, there's a COVID-19 injured list, basically a coronavirus DL that is going to be no minimum stay, no maximum stay. You can go on it and not count against the roster limits, which are all crazy this year and hard to explain quickly. But that is going to be in place if you test positive, if you're exposed, or if you have symptoms. So they've thought of everything, or they think they've thought of everything to this point. These positive tests are inevitable. We're seeing it in the NFL, in the NBA, tennis, golf, so and obviously now in baseball as well.
Chris Cotillo is joining us now in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. He writes for MassLive.com. And Chris, I know that you reacted to somebody on Twitter reporting that teams can reset their luxury tax penalties and rates if the season is played to its conclusion. If there's a shutdown and season can't be finished, then the luxury tax penalty rates will revert to 2019 status. How big of a deal is that for teams like the one that you cover, the Boston Red Sox, or some of these other teams that like to spend over the tax? I would imagine that's a huge benefit for the haves in Major League Baseball.
For sure. It's an absolutely massive thing for the Red Sox because their singular goal, even though they preached competitiveness and long-term view and all those fun buzzwords over the winter, their singular goal was really to get under that competitive balance tax. That's why they traded Mookie Betts, who is a franchise player, a homegrown guy, and a trade that was received absolutely horribly by the fan base here. It was to get under that tax, reset, kind of have a bridge year this year, and then go after whoever in free agency in the winter, whether that be Betts or George Springer, who's a guy from New England, or someone else. If they're not able to get under that luxury tax, they would be in the same boat next winter as they were in the previous winter. They'd have to stay under and basically vow to not be competitive in 2021 again, and it would set back the whole plan. The Red Sox, everybody's rooting for this entire season to be completed, but for all the work the Red Sox have done would basically be completely undone. I know there's other clubs in that boat. The Cubs, I know, we're dealing with something similar, but it would be a massive blow, and it would be the same thing if the season was canceled outright. So you know, that was pretty significant news today, at least for the Red Sox.
Hey, Chris, this might fall under that blanket that you kind of laid out a second ago of hard to explain quickly, but I'm searching for clarity on how the 40-man roster is going to work with all of this, with the taxi squad. Like, do you have any clarity on, like, hey, if you're going to take a guy, if you need a few guys from the taxi squad and you need to bring them on your 40-man roster, do guys have to go through waivers? Like, do you know how the 40-man roster itself is working kind of in a nutshell?
No, that was kind of unclear in the operations manual. I think the 40-man roster is not really going to matter once you declare your 60 players. So in the next, like, 3 or 4 days, each team is going to declare their player pool. That's going to be 60 guys who can be active. And it's not like if someone is inactive at the beginning, they're just done for the season. Obviously, with injuries and trades and releases, you can bring guys in and out of that pool. Obviously, there's going to have to be, you know, testing and health and safety protocols from those guys who are going to be potentially at home and not at a team facility. But you can have a maximum of 60, you know, in uniform, whether that be traveling with the ball club or at that alternate site, which every club is going to have. So your whole 40-man roster has to be part of that pool. And then you can add, obviously, the mass, I think, checks out to 20 other guys if you have a full 40-man for that 60-man pool. At that point, though, I don't think the 40-man roster really is going to matter for the rest of the year. But it sounds like, at least for opening day, you know, a team, the home team will have 30 active players. The road team will have 30 active players, plus three guys they bring as that backup emergency taxi squad. And then everybody else from that pool of 60 will be at these alternate sites, which I think in almost every case is going to be a minor league stadium nearby. The Red Sox are probably going to have it either in Pawtucket or Lowell, Massachusetts. So, but they haven't decided that. It's going to be I think it's interesting for GMs that like to make a lot of moves and a lot of tweaks to the back end of the roster. You have to think of those health and safety issues. You know, you can't just have call-ups and do that seamlessly and cycle through the back end of your roster because there is that health risk, having someone new enter your bubble or having someone leave. So I think it'll be interesting to see how aggressive GMs are with that.
You know, a couple of weeks ago, the report was that teams or local governments were going to be able to dictate whether or not people would be allowed in ballparks and capacities and all that kind of stuff. Well, we've heard about Texas. You know, we've heard about the Rangers. We've heard about the Marlins possibly being allowed to have people in the ballparks, the Cubs and the White Sox.
It'll be the first time for them in Miami. Yeah.
Chris.
So we're going to get through this entire interview.
But there
are reports the Cubs and White Sox are considering the exact same thing. So if some teams are allowing it, but other teams are not allowing that, how is that going to work, and how does that affect pay? How does that affect revenue? Like, all of this stuff needs to be considered.
Yeah, it does. It's a great question that I think nobody knows the answer to because it's such a unique situation. I think in terms of player pay, I don't think it changes the calculus at all. I think the owners can reap the benefits from ticket sales. It might make sense, and I'm not sure exactly how it's broken down now, but teams to revenue share, maybe even more than normal based on the ticket sales, because it's completely out of their control if they can have fans in the ballpark. So whatever money is made off tickets gets split among the 30 teams. That makes sense to me. I'm sure a lot of owners in places that are going to have fans would never go for that, because as we've learned over 2 months of nonstop negotiations about that were centered around greed, all these people are not really willing to make concessions too quickly. I think there's going to be a lot of markets where you're just not going to see fans at all. Obviously, these ballparks are not going to be full. But you're seeing even in NASCAR, they've started filling the tracks up with, you know, I think 5,000 fans over the weekend at Talladega. I know more about NASCAR and golf than I ever have in my entire life. It's the only two sports on right now. But I think, you know, sports, baseball is going to be a little bit behind on that. It does help, obviously, if they're outdoors. I think it's clear that being outdoors gives you some advantage over being indoors, but it's going to come down to really politics in all of these states, which is never something you want to rely on, but it looks like that's the way it's going to be.
Chris, I know Liverpool won 4-0 today in EPL, so I feel you.
Yeah, right. That is the John Henry-owned Liverpool. People around here, the Red Sox Twitter account always tweets out when they are winning. So John Henry, everything he touches turns to gold. Even during the shutdown, he owns iRacing, apparently, the simulated NASCAR thing.
Wow.
And, of course, that took off. So like I said, everything he touches.
It's incredible. All right, Chris, appreciate it. Chris Cotillo, you can follow him on Twitter at his name, at Chris Cotillo. Check out all his great work at masslive.com. He's been writing a lot about the MLB rule changes and what they all mean for 2020. Chris, thank you.
Yep, thank you, guys.
All right, that's great. Again, Chris Cotillo here in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN with Chris Ronji and Brad Thompson and Anthony Stalter. Ronge noted that John Brebbia apparently had Tommy John surgery back in May. So the Cardinals reliever will not be ready to go in 2020.
Damn!
What does it all mean? We'll tell you next on 101 ESPN.